Okay.
I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, Increase Your Bottom Line Through Collaborative Teamwork, Tips and Best Practices. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and then we'll jump into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. So on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so we'll have time to talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes during our program, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Again, in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see a print icon so you can print the slides out. Our special guest with us today is Tom Drucker, who is a longtime friend, business colleague, cool guy, worldly individual. Tom's work focuses on helping leaders achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet unseen obstacles that sometimes get in the way. I've seen Tom's work over and over again with individuals and groups to help them achieve remarkable results. Let me mention that again. Truly remarkable results.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Tom has degrees in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their business and, most importantly, on the hearts and minds of the people that he works with. I feel privileged to have Tom with us today and share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing in today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic is using performance incentives in difficult times. Tom, I want to welcome you to Open Line.
Thanks, Dana. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's a pleasure to speak to the rest of you. Obviously, it's an interesting example of collaboration being on a one-way voice line, but to share a visual. So I'm delighted to be here, and hopefully we'll have some dialogue through your questions that you type in and also at the end through the conversation. And what I've started to put together are a series of insights that I've recently had about collaboration, because as I work with clients, as Dana said, all around the world, one of the things that's becoming clear to me is that it used to be collaboration was a choice, no longer a choice. It used to be that working in teams, working virtually, was something that people did when they chose to or needed to. Now it's a fundamental fact. So it's not virtual or face-to-face. It's always both. And so, Dana, maybe we should look at the first slide.
Okay. Perfect.
Because as people will soon find out, I don't have – I'm using an iPad, for those of you who are interested in technology, so I'm not in front of a computer, and we found out that I can't make the slides work by myself. Anyway, it says competition and collaboration, they're not opposites. They're both forces that can is the operative word, complement each other. And one of the things that I don't know about your business, but in my business, part of what I try to do is help people overcome the natural tendency to compete. And in my experience, both as a shrink and as a business guy, competition is natural. We grew up with it. I don't know about you, but I grew up with some siblings, and there was a lot of competition in our household. And in business and in school, there's a lot of competition. Collaboration seems to be, as they say, an unnatural act. And more and more we have to, as human beings and as business people, learn collaboration. And so that's one of the things that my clients are constantly asking for in deeper and deeper ways. So I say that successful leaders pair collaboration inside their company with competition on the outside, and that people who unite vigorously to compete in a marketplace can become highly energized about collaboration within the company. And the critical thing I see, and I'm assuming others do too, is the artificiality of what I call functional silos, or silos created by locations. Some of us are working with companies that have different locations around the globe, and very often they're cultural boundaries, and we tend to think of those as kind of impenetrable membranes, whereas a little insight and applied practice can make them very permeable. So basically, I'm suggesting that, just to summarize the first piece, that collaboration is no longer an option, so we might as well get good at it, get comfortable with it, even though it's not a natural state.
Hey, Tom, a question just came in about collaboration and democracy.
Great question.
Any thoughts on democracy within the company?
I had a client tell me recently, we were taking on an assignment for him, and he runs a professional services firm. And he said, I just want to be clear, Tom, as we get people involved in collaborating on changing certain things within the company, he wanted me to make sure he didn't have people confuse collaboration with democracy. And it's very important that people not confuse collaboration with democracy. And in fact, good leaders forecast very different ways of making decisions. Some can be truly, let's vote. Most often, there is a decision maker, and he or she may want to get input from others. That can be done in a collaborative way. He may want a task force or a group to give them opinions. Very often, what I find at least, is that many organizations use a variety of tools, and collaboration should never be confused with giving over the right to make a decision and be held accountable for a decision to a group. That's a fine way, but it's one of several, like an artist with a palette. They have many different colors to use. And voting or democracy, which is, of course, a very powerful form of governance, should not be confused with collaborative methods or approaches. I hope that answers the question of the...
It segues right into the next slide. Want me to move forward?
Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
And there are many different types of collaborative activities. One of the things that I find is that, and we're going to focus on it a little bit here today, is the whole idea of a group of people working inside a company to produce a particular result. But as I look in my life, a lot of my work is done through and with other people, whether that's an assistant or a colleague or a partner in an engagement. And they're people that I've worked with for decades. And one of the things I find is that just human to human, I'm continually improving my ability to collaborate. I've been married for 28, going on 29 years. Boy, that's a collaborative activity.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I know you're a long married person as well. And
yes,
those of us who have been, as I say, married from time to time, this is my second, can appreciate, I think, the learning involved in those kind of collaborative relationships. But most of what we do at work, it involves us working with people often from different perspectives, different backgrounds, different skill sets. And how do we work together to enhance our ability to get work done without it taking a huge amount of time? And I'd be curious, when the people on the call think about it, what are they collaborating on currently or have planned? Because like anything, if you're focusing on a particular collaborative activity, this conversation may be particularly helpful.
Some of you are working in a collaborative way on some project, why don't you just write a little sentence and send it over so we can get an idea right now?
And I'd be particularly interested if any of you are collaborating with people outside of your company or your business. I know I just came last week from a company that's working very actively with its supply chain partners. That's a particular kind of niche that I think is evolving as an important kind of business-to-business collaboration. And, of course, customer service being what it is, there's always collaboration going on with our customers. Let's go to the next slide, Dana.
All righty. Also, when we were talking originally, Tom, you had mentioned some example of a credit card company.
Yes.
Do you recall that?
Well, I certainly know that. Actually, I don't recall.
Okay.
A credit card company?
I just made a brief note of it.
I think it was, it may have been the company that uses those cards to swipe, the secure identity cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I was saying is that they are collaborating with their supply chain partners.
Gotcha.
And they've taken an enormous amount of costs out of their product, which is allowing them to be competitive in an extremely competitive marketplace. I think that was the example I was using.
Okay.
I think it was a supply chain collaboration.
Okay.
Which is a card, but not a credit card.
Gotcha.
Current slide, it says collaborate for a purpose. This may seem obvious, but I'm amazed at the number of people who kind of get lost in collaborating with people, and they sort of forget there needs to be a purpose, a unifying goal. There needs to be a business purpose for collaboration. And the best way I've found to describe a unifying goal is it, first of all, has a common outcome, a common fate. It's simple, it's concrete, it's measurable. It's meaningful and stirs people's passion or commitment to something bigger than their own self or their own job. And ideally, the way our businesses are organized today, if you can find a way to put customer first or put them in the mix, it's always important. It's a good point of reference always to be able to put our business into context called what are we doing to serve customers? And I think it's important to notice that collaborative activities sometimes can overwhelm people because of the complexity of dealing with people in different time zones or different functions. And what will help, I found, is just reiterating, what's the purpose? What are we doing here? You know the old saying of it's hard to remember your mission was to drain the swamp when you are up to your you-know-what and alligators? And sometimes it's important just to continue to reframe and remind people what the purpose of any collaborative activity is. And I would recommend that being a fallback position if ever collaboration gets rocky, to remind people kind of what the point is here, and that helps to re-energize and refocus people.
Well, that's an interesting. Well, we have some feedback, Tom, from a couple
great
of our attendees today. One of them is we try to work with the other teams, but it just ends up in a big fight.
Yep.
Our group is trying to figure out how to collaborate. We haven't figured it out yet. Another one says, has just broken up internally into marketing teams of three to gain new business in specific industries. We'll be identifying groups, associations outside the firm with partners to partner with. This is a new effort for the team. Collaboration, what the hell? We might as well give it a try. Nothing else has worked yet.
Well, you know, the comments, and they
go on, but you get the gist.
This is great. I mean, first of all, I think, as we just said, it's very important to reiterate the common goal and to make sure that you can, as I say, connect the dots so that each person sees what's in it for them. People will behave consistent with their own self-interest, and they will do that first and foremost before they will behave in regard to someone else's self-interest. So it's very important that people see what's in it for them as well as hopefully what's in it for someone else. And the whole idea of working as a group who is given a common goal, sometimes they will feel coerced rather than invited. And so one of the things that I found is really important is to make sure that there is a connection between what someone is asked to do and who asks them, so that it isn't something that's out of the norm of their job or their accountability, but really right in the center of it. And there's very often a value of having what many of us know in team initiatives to be a sponsor, someone like an owner or a senior manager who isn't involved in the day-to-day work of the collaborative effort, but who is a kind of person who can enhance people's understanding of, hey, I better kind of get with the program here and stop the bickering or the what I call the food fight between functions or between groups of people who are not used to working together.
Tom, on that note, somebody just wrote something in. I'm working with multiple studio directors on marketing and business promotions, collaborating ideas for multiple projects at one time. Efficiency is a problem, too much on the plate. Any thoughts on that regarding the efficiency?
Yeah, one of the things about collaborative work, and I think we'll get to it in another slide or two, is a lot of people make what I call a rookie mistake of feeling like collaboration requires everyone to be on the same call or in the same meeting in order to get work done. So a lot of time is spent updating people or sharing things with people as opposed to sending a document in advance, letting people read it, and come to the meeting with something to do, which requires everyone's interest and attention and input. Because the worst thing in the world for particularly early stage collaborative efforts is to spend a lot of unproductive time. It just is painful. And so if the individual who's driving the collaborative effort can kind of do a little work individually with people to get them kind of up and excited about this and willing to participate, what they get to do is promise in return that the people's time won't be wasted or squandered. And what's very useful for that is the whole idea of sharing information in advance. Often the leader has to do a little individual work with people rather than to do that work in a group. They do it one-on-one. They get people involved. They get people enrolled. And they give, ideally, some teams or participants some support so that it doesn't feel like all the effort is going out and nothing of value is coming in.
Ooh, that's a good metric. That's a good segue to the next slide.
Yeah.
Personal barriers to collaboration.
Yes, and the thing, again, if we go back to the beginning, most people are pretty good at being competitive and not great at being collaborative, and one of the things is big egos block learning. Defensiveness limits listening. Arrogance blocks self-awareness. You could kind of, as they say, spend a whole hour talking about those two sentences right there. We won't. A fear of failure or looking bad limits risk-taking with others. They don't want to look bad or be gossiped about. Attention on image rather than on producing an important business result. And again, it's the leader sometimes who can help make sure that people are positioned well, look good in a group, highlights their contribution, acknowledges them verbally or in email messages. And again, very often the skill gap that's most critical in early stage collaboration is facilitating these kinds of conversations one-on-one and then in a group. Because again, we are often not naturally equipped to do the kind of teaching and guiding and facilitation that's so important to make time spent together valuable. Very often we apply the kind of methods that we have been exposed to one-on-one and do it in a group, and very often we have a different time frame. It takes longer. We're more patient in some cases, where what we need to be is less patient and more focused by planning. Planning is one of the single most important skills to effective collaboration. You plan a meeting, you plan a conversation, so that when you execute it, there's a sense of design and velocity, and people have a sense of momentum and excitement. Participation needs to actually energize people rather than sucking the air out of the room or the virtual.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And Tom has offered to do an open line next year, 2011, on running effective meetings. So I'm really excited about that.
And again, most of what the people said when you were reading some of their comments all revolve around a project, either starting a project or having a project, different marketing teams, different groups. And again, I think it's a tool that's being used throughout businesses. Sometimes, unfortunately, like any tool, it can be ill-planned or maybe thought through. So someone says, let's have a team, let's have a group, let's have a task force. And you want to make sure that the individual or project sponsor, the highest level person available, really make sure that there's a connection, connect the dots between the business goal and the strategy of the business. And ideally, each person participating is going to get something out of it for themselves, not just for their own job, but even growing as a person and as a professional. And it needs to be tied into their objectives and incentives. Very often, another rookie mistake is leaders or sponsors or just group people will find that they feel they're being asked to take on more, and it's not included in their annual objectives or their incentive pay. I just finished a project with 9 cross-functional teams, people from all over the world, and as we launched them, it suddenly hit me, oh boy, they've all got MBOs, which are tied to incentive compensation, and so quickly we got the CEO to send around a note saying, by the way, within the space of a month, these objectives for your participation in these cross-functional teams will be included in your annual bonus and incentive comp, and that has been done. And that way people feel that this isn't work just being asked on top of the work they already are doing, but is in fact valuable and acknowledged as such.
Hey, Tom, you work with companies globally, but you also work with smaller mom-and-pop companies and
yep.
mid-cap companies. I've seen you work with a little bit of everything. Do you see any difference on the slide for tips for starting a project? Any difference at the end of the day for a global company versus a mom-and-pop organization?
Well, one is very important that the leader have a clear relationship to each person on the team. So if it's an owner, like I'm working right now with a group and the individual who's managing the organization, one-on-one we're sitting and involving people in a conversation to say, why is participating in this project important for the business, important for me as the owner, and important for you as a key member? And that eyeball-to-eyeball, voice-to-voice conversation is, there's no substitute for it.
Gotcha.
By the way, I think someone has got some noise in the background and may want to mute their phone because it may get in the way of everyone hearing. One of the things that I found on virtual collaborative
the conference is in
skills.
Lecture mode. The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
Dana?
The conference is in lecture mode.
Okay, that should take care of it.
Okay, good.
So
the answer to your question is there's no substitute for leadership. Leadership is not inconsistent with collaboration. It's critical to collaboration. Leadership needs to be in an invitation, not an edict. Leadership needs to be conditioned to the purpose and direction of the one-person, two-person team that may be reaching out to their customers or supply chain partners or their associates. If it's not a full-time business, I just talked to someone yesterday who was running a IT firm and uses a lot of independent contractors. Collaboration needs to be sourced by the leader. Collaboration needs to be acknowledged by the leader, and there needs to be a very clear purpose. So that would be one answer to the question, Dana, that it works for individuals in big or small companies. And frankly, even large companies, ultimately it comes down to a few people working together. I did some work for GE in their internal audit organization, huge organization because they audit everything in GE's portfolio. And what I found is ultimately at the end of the day, you want leaders to be able to look at other leaders in the eye or virtually or over a video conference and say, hey, we've got something to do together. Let's make it count. And so ultimately it comes down to people working with people. I hope that answers your question.
Yep, that's perfect. I apologize for the noise in the background. I thought I had that in lecture mode, so actually everybody, quite a group actually for the number of people we have on here, but I apologize. That was my fault for not.
So let's go on to the next slide, just so we've got time for questions at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I would say one of the major paradigm shifts in collaborative work I've seen over the last few years is to be really respectful of people's time. Everyone I know that I work with is over the top in terms of demand. And there is a huge just uptick in the amount that's being asked of everyone, particularly as we sort of hopefully come out of this recession. There's been a great deal of downsizing and relocation of work within companies, big and small. And so one of the things that I believe about collaboration is people need to remember time together is expensive, so you want to use it well. One of the examples of that paradigm shift of being more conscious about time and how people need to work together effectively is to make meetings, as I said a few minutes ago, places and activities where, whether they're face-to-face or online or over a telephone conference like this, where people do real work together. Most people in this, you know, web conference are being asked to be an audience, which has its place, of course. We're doing some educational work here. But if it was real collaboration, we would be prepping for the meeting. We'd make it a can't-miss event. We'd forecast it with a written agenda that would have on it the outcomes of the meeting and how each person was to prepare for the meeting. It used to be when I started, the whole idea of a meeting, people came to it. I spent 15 years at Xerox. I don't know if that was in some of the pre-work material, but you know, global company. I was working out of the office of the chairman and president, and I spent a lot of time in meetings around the world. And I know that people came to meetings to rest. I couldn't believe it. They actually came to meetings. They wouldn't necessarily fall asleep, but they'd sort of come and they'd start, you know, kind of doing their paperwork, and they'd sit, and they, and then something changed. We had an IT, head of IT. I'll never forget this guy. Walked into his conference room, and on the wall was a huge clock. And he would put in everyone's ID number when they walked in the room, and then on the clock would click off the amount of money that it was costing Xerox for every minute we were in the room together. Well, it was revelatory. And as a result of that early work with a guy named Paul Strassman, I learned the value of what now I think is a pretty standard best practice, that the whole idea of meetings, it's not time to rest, it's time to work creatively together. And if the leader can tee it up that way and execute it that way, make them short. Don't make meetings hours long, particularly if it's a meeting where some people are connected via a audio conference like this. Make them so that they are experiences where people feel engaged and productive. And make sure that each agenda item should involve people beyond being an audience. Listening to what could be read really sucks the energy out of individuals. And also the whole idea of multitasking during a meeting, if people are engaged and they know they need to be engaged ahead of time, you will hear a diminished amount of keystrokes in the background for people, you know, doing their email while they're on a conference call. I think we've covered that slide. Let's go to the next slide.
One valuable use of group time.
Yeah. In my experience, and I'd be very interested to have other people share, we've gotten some examples of what people are doing to collaborate, like focusing on individual markets. In my experience today, one of the things that's probably a high percentage of new collaborative efforts is to refine a business process, to be more effective and efficient, doing more with what we've got, doing more with who we've got. And what that requires is people learning together to improve the way they work together within a company. I was just with someone from the company Pinkberries, you know, the soft serve frozen yogurt. And we were talking about a project I'm doing next month for the Innovation Center at McDonald's. And one of the things there that's so interesting is when you get people together for the purpose of inventing and acknowledging the ability to close a gap between where they are and what they could do to just get a little bit more creativity out of people in a process, you unleash a kind of creative energy that is kind of tangible. So one of the things I've found is, now this is kind of a criticism, and I would be delighted if people could I guess make me wrong about this. I see a kind of epidemic of process illiteracy in the workforce. I see people not really understanding how to just map a process, how to put measurements in place and metrics in place so that they can begin to create a map and a visual and a description of the way it is and the way it could be or should be, and then put some plans in place to close those gaps. That's one of the most important things I think people can do cross-functionally and cross-locations, because it's a amazingly important tool. It's been around for decades. It's at the core of Six Sigma and quality and improvements in customer service and in increasing margins for any kind of business, whether it's a, what would you call it, a service or a making of a product. And it often is located within a specialized part of a business, like quality. And what I see in companies that are capable in growing and engaging their workforce at every level is a better distribution of basic problem-solving skills and basic process improvement skills. And one of the cornerstones of this is iteration, that each cycle of figuring out how to improve is based on analysis of observed facts and experiences, and then hopefully a little dose of creativity and innovation and thinking, as they say, outside of the box. And one of the things that I think, if you're a very small company or a large company, you can do to ensure that you're able as a company and as individuals in that company to deal effectively and collaboratively with any business challenge, is to learn to think process, to map process, and improve processes. I think it's one of the most important things people can do collaboratively that will help drive business results and help our economy here and abroad thrive. So it's a sort of a pitch for that.
Somebody has a question and then also a comment. Question is, I'll just throw them both out. Inventing and creating is tough in a CPA firm industry. Thoughts? So hold that for a second. And the other comment is, we use Six Sigma techniques to collaborate on projects involved in finding the problem, measuring the data, analyzing the data, improving the process, and finally controlling the process so that it doesn't recur.
That's great. And then whoever said that one, I would say bravo. You want to teach that to as many people in your company as possible, because it is a competitive advantage. And to the first person, I would say, I know, actually, Dana, you and I know a CPA firm who prides themselves on not just producing numbers, but producing insight and information. And that if a CPA and a CPA firm in their interactions with clients can begin to help the client improve the way they function, then the CPA firm is adding value beyond just doing the audit or beyond just helping to close the books for this quarter. That there's a certain consultative role that I think great CPAs play. I certainly know internal auditors who do a consultative role rather than a judgmental and kind of, you know, financial cop role do better in the long run. I was just talking to one of the managing partners of BDO, which is a, I guess, top four firm. They're going through a training initiative right now in the same way. I know a single, I guess you'd call him, he owns a small CPA firm, so he's got one partner, it's himself. And he's going through a process where he's giving his clients in this interim period before the next year starts some offers of training and support to help them improve their business as a way to add value, because CPA services are becoming a commodity. And so I would say that there is an opportunity as a CPA professional to bond with and provide a level of added value services to clients that can differentiate yourself in the marketplace and move from being a commodity provider to an added value service provider.
Well, that's perfect. Well, thank you, Tom.
And it's working, at least for these folks.
Yeah, no, that's good. And also, if anybody wants to talk to Tom offline, Tom's contact information is on the screen there.
Right. Be happy to talk to anybody about this. And if, you know, I'm covering something that doesn't seem to be on purpose to your circumstances, you know, shoot me an email. I'll be happy to, you know, give you some thoughts or to help refine what I've said to make it more meaningful to you. And as they say, no cost involved, just part of the service here that Dana and I are offering to his valuable customers and colleagues.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Collaborative cautions.
Yeah, so these are just some kind of rules of the road that I've learned as far as best practices. Make sure that collaborative work does not become an excuse for failing to deliver on individual or team results. Particularly sometimes collaborative results can occur as an add-on. And we talked earlier about the importance of integrating it into the way in which your normal individual results are evaluated. But it's important that you don't want people to have excuses like, well, I couldn't do this because I was doing the team project. That is what we call BS, which stands not for behavioral science but for something else, akin with the dog ate my homework. We don't want people to – thank you for laughing, Dan. We don't want to fail to establish agreed-upon metrics and methods of measurement. Collaboration shouldn't be an excuse for fuzziness. And we should publish results and analyze trends no matter what. So if, for instance, something as simple as how long is it taking us to get this project done, very often people say, you know, I could have done it quicker myself. And if that's the case, then let's maybe get a little deeper into, well, maybe we need to do it better, rather than, you know, sort of assume that collaborative work isn't effective in our company. Maybe assume that maybe we need to learn a little bit better about it. And then whatever the project is that's being done collaboratively, make sure that you measure what you do. Because as they say, if you're serious about playing the game, you've got to keep score. And then ensure collaborative work becomes a part of the formal performance appraisal process so people are learning. If people are learning to collaborate, they will be adding value to themselves as business professionals and adding value to the capacity of the company to do what it is in the marketplace to do, to serve its customers, to provide better services, or to provide better products. That, like anything else, a team is certainly a collection of talented individuals. And a company is a collection of talented individuals. That's how people get to the job. But in today's work, I believe it's important that human beings learn to work together. As it says here, the cautions would be to fail to see that collaboration isn't an excuse, but is a support for outstanding performance. And it occurs to me that the next slide actually is also a caution. But it's also a reminder. And I sometimes use the metaphor, don't confuse the menu for the meal. Good collaboration can amplify strengths, but poor collaboration is worse than no collaboration at all. Because if you don't apply some of the basic best practices, what you do is squander people's time and energy, which pushes them further away from being willing to share, participate, and engage in the important work of working with other people. Because truly, individually, we're terrific often, but together we often can be stronger than individuals can be by themselves. And it's really important to remember the goal of collaboration is not collaboration, but better results. And very often, by confusing the menu for the meal, we kind of lose the sight of, well, what are we collaborating for, and how what we're collaborating for drives our business, whether it's a a sole proprietorship or in a small business with a few people or a large business. Ultimately, it's our ability to produce results with other people that makes us stronger and gives us a greater capacity to use our skills in relationship to produce results that would be tougher to do by ourselves if we do it right. And in my experience, I've gotten some of my greatest satisfaction from work in working with other people, as I sometimes say, in the trenches, that I look back and my high points, my peak experiences in work are often with other people. And they come about as a result of taking on a challenge that when we started, we said, I have no idea how we're going to get this done, but we must, we have to, we want to. And somehow, through the process of working together and learning together, we have produced results collectively and collaboratively that we would not have been able to do by ourselves. But it does take a kind of willingness to put ourselves out there, to risk being criticized, observed, and critiqued, because collaboration is a public process. And often our work in our own individual offices and cubicles can be a private process. And so the collaborative effort is often, for a lot of people, exposing. and revealing. And if we can be generous with ourselves, we can support each other learning together.
Tom, a question just came in on if there were three ground rules when getting a team together for starting the collaborative process, what would the top three rules be?
Make sure it's tied to the business. Make sure people know that their work effort is not in the margins, but really connected to the way that their work is going to be supported, acknowledged, and appreciated. And three, let them learn from each other or from someone who is brought in as an expert, because you want to make sure that the collaborative experience isn't done without thought and design. If the collaborative process is tailored to their needs and their experience, the chances are their early experiences will be positive, and therefore success will breed success. If the negative experiences are not designed, then the early experiences will be frustrating and painful, and people will say, well, this didn't work. Screw it. Let's go back to the way we've done it. And that will make it harder to climb that mountain of collaboration going forward.
Okay, that's very well put. Okay. In just a few minutes, we're going to, after we conclude the show, I'm going to turn off the recording equipment, and then we're going to open up the line so you'll have an opportunity to talk directly with Tom. I'm going to ask everybody to put your phones on mute and then just unmute your phone. Otherwise, we'll have too much background noise there. You'll see on your screen an area. You can register for our upcoming August 24th Open Line program, Using Performance Incentives in Difficult Times. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. So please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Tom and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Tom to further discussion on this topic about your industry, your team, some one-to-one time, you'll see Tom's contact information on the screen there. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Now, please hold the line. Let me undo the recording equipment here, and then we will have Tom on with us.
Take real questions from real people. How fabulous.